Wait, I have a question for you guys. If I eat this tangerine, like, is it going to be like I'm doing weird food ASMR stuff? Like, are you going to be able to like hear me eating the tangerine? Should I just
fuck
the tangerine?
Yeah, but I'm into that, so you should do it.
There's only one way to find out.
Have you ever watched those videos though, where like the person is like,
oh no, I haven't.
Like a mukbang video.
Yeah,
like the crab exactly, legs like a, person.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't watch any like ASMR. Like I always notice on my Instagram Explore page, there's a ton of like slime videos and like videos that are called like satisfy videos or like satisfying videos that are just like weird tactile things happening that I don't really like. Sometimes it's like smashing fruits or like it's like weird, like first person, like you just see hands like touching stuff and it's really awful.
What does Instagram think of you?
I don't know, man. I think it thinks I'm like a kinky 14-year-old girl.
Sick. That's how I think of you also.
Sam, what email? What kind of emails you just get? I'm dying to hear about this email now.
Speaking of kinky 14-year-old girls, I just got an email from Cafe Forgot. That was
oh my god,
about a guided fashion meditation that they have
That's
on their
cool.
site.
That's great.
That you can use to get in touch with your inner style, which I think is amazing.
The cool thing about
do
that
this afternoon.
You are gonna do it, aren't you? What the fuck are you drinking?
Absolutely.
That's so much ice. You drink all that ice in the morning. You're gonna like chill
it's
your.
Nice, it's nice coffee.
It constricts your vocal cords though, Sam. It's bad when you're trying to pod.
I need to, no, it helps me sort of achieve the optimal vocal fry.
Like the thing about Cafe Forgot or whatever, I don't even know them, but like, if you think about it, like fashion should be way more like for the freaks. Like it should be way like weirder in the way that like art is generally speaking, like art school kids and like art scenes, like, back in the day before it was just like a big joke, like Bushwick was full of like real kind of like freaky weirdos. They're not all like geniuses or like even respectable, but there's like a freaky quality to it that fashion now, because it's just mainstream entertainment, pop culture just doesn't have, you know, and like Cafe Forgot seems to have that. And like, you see pockets of it a little bit, but it's like, you know, when the biggest pop stars in the world are wearing the brands that are considered to be the coolest in the world, they're not freaky.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That's why corporate lunch is for the real freaks only.
It's for real freaks only.
Episode 92?
93.
I've been wrong. Every time we do this, I'm wrong.
It's like how people don't know what day it is. It's fine.
I know. I need to start tattooing. I'll be tattooing like hatch marks on my arm that I can count. So it's episode 93 of Corporate Lunch. Noah, Sam, and Rachel here. Will is doing magazine making this morning, so he's absent.
Salute.
And continuing on our this journey we've all been on together through uncharted waters, we're going to have Joachim Halen from Our Legacy here soon. He will call from Sweden or wherever he is. I don't know where he is. He said he would call. And he'll join us. The big Swedish homie who is one third of Our Legacy and is just a really cool guy. So he'll be here soon. Are you guys excited to talk to a Swedish person? Have you guys ever conversed with a Swede before?
I've conversed with Brian Boy, who's like a, you know, married to a Swede.
And me, I'm a Swede.
I had a couple Swedish au pairs growing up. We'll probably surprise nobody.
That sounded really nasty.
Damn.
They were great. I love my Swedish au pairs.
That's just like a babysitter, right?
Yeah, basically.
They had like Swedish accents?
Yeah, they were from Sweden.
Oh, like they came here for that job.
Yeah, you like
they came here to be with Sam.
Yeah, you come to America for a year and you like learn, you know, you improve your English and travel a little bit and take care of, you know, two screaming, insane twin boys. And then you go back to Sweden.
My sailing instructor was Swedish when I went to sailing camp. Yeah. And once we were bringing a boat back to the shore, and we accidentally walked into a like pit of jellyfish, and they were stinging me. I was like 11 years old, and they're like stinging us madly. And I'm like, Yos, this hurts so much. And she's like, stop being a baby. I remember that. She like yelled at me, stop being a baby.
This was like one of the deleted scenes from Midsommar when they wandered into the jellyfish exactly. house on the farm.
Exactly. And I got back to, we got back to the shore, and I ran to the infirmary and like covered myself in meat tenderizer. And like Yos, you know, at dinner a few hours later is like, I'm not even in pain. So I have a lot of respect for Yos and the Swedish
people. Swedish people are hardcore. I was going to ask, I think we should ask Joakim, you know, how many of those midsummer like festivities he's attended,
yeah.
you know, if that's part of the regular like summer get down or what.
Yeah. It's like Coachella there.
That's right. It's coming soon. Yeah. I guess they've canceled it. Although I don't know. Sweden seems to be on their
Sweden
own
hasn't
program.
Canceled anything. Stores are still open. Restaurants are still open. I think it's up for debate whether it's like actually working or not.
Well, they've had a very small number of deaths, which is pretty impressive. Well, I was just going to say the photographs there look so surreal right now because everyone is so beautiful and the light there is amazing. So you see these like crowded streets with these like golden haired people. And like, meanwhile, like I look out my window and like people are like crying on the street wearing masks. it's
and
really
it only
surreal.
Rains.
Yeah. Yeah. It only rains.
I think it rules that like Sweden is always kind of like the conservative punchline. Like, well, what do you, you know, why don't you just go to Sweden if you want like universal healthcare or whatever? And now all these people who are like, we need to reopen America are like, look at Sweden. Like, isn't that awesome? And it's like, yeah, we've been saying this the whole fucking time. Sweden rules. And the reason why they can do this is because they have like universal healthcare and like enormous amount of trust in like the government to provide for them. So maybe we should see if Joakim has like a guest house or something.
Yeah.
That we can go live in.
Enormous yeah. amount of trust in Joakim to provide for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Provide Fire Johns for me.
Fire I mean, Johns.
Our legacy is basically as old as Sam Hain and is arguably more fit and better suited for the world. So Sam wore his Our Legacy sweater today, it looks like.
Good.
It's beautiful.
What else is on your guys' mind this morning?
What's on your head? What is that hat?
I got a new hat from Pa.
Nice.
From Peter and Al.
Is that what Pa stands for?
Yeah. So that's a really funny thing about
wow,
it.
You
is,
just blew my mind.
Yeah. I think
know,
it's just
I thought it was just
Peter
like
and Al.
Vibe, you know?
I know. And I mean, the brand's been around for a while, but I don't think that those two guys are really out there that much until recently. And it was actually just, I just realized that too, that's exactly what the name means. But they rule and they make really good sweat shorts and socks. I just got a couple little like comfy little new spring items and they threw in this tennis hat for me, which is actually quite good, I think. And I wear
is
it
the
constantly.
Inside of the brim green?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Damn. I really feel like when I was growing up, all the songs I like, at the beginning, you know, someone would say like dog chow, nah, nah. And I was like, that's weird, but like, whatever. And then I realized in 2009 or 10 that in fact, all of these songs were produced by Dark Child. And this is like the producer's signature at the beginning of the song, you know, like
dog
Mike
chow.
Will made this, like, it's like
yeah.
Dark Child, nah, nah. They weren't saying dog chow. That's how I feel about what you just told me about Pa.
Yeah, mind blown. Yeah, you thought it was just that the full name of the brand was Grandpa and everyone was just shortening it to mm-hmm. Pa.
Right. And then there's like a women's wear brand called Meemaw.
Pa is maybe the last fashion show that we'll ever go to.
I didn't make it. I was busy.
A historic photograph of Sam and I was taken outside.
True. Except for all of the digital fashion shows and events we'll be attending in June.
The virtual front row of corporate lunch is going to be really iconic.
What I really am worried about is like, how will brands replicate the unparalleled feeling of insecurity that I feel at every fashion show in a digital capacity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, one thing they could do would just be to like every like minute or so for 5 seconds stream you to the masses. Like it would cut from the presentation to your living room. And then maybe you could get a little of that experience.
Oh, totally. And then like a really beautiful French man comes over and is like, we actually need you to move. I'm sorry.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm like, this is my house, man. And he's like, I'm so sorry. It is not, it is Rihanna.
Yeah, right. Every couple of minutes, like a passive aggressive, you get like a passive aggressive directive from someone with a French accent who's just like demands you do something like, yeah, move or uncross your legs or move your bag or, you know, get out, just get the fuck out of here.
You weren't invited.
That I really think, yeah, one of the, like everyone's
you're not
like,
mobile Aji.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, yeah, I am.
I'm Hein. That's me.
I feel like I've seen some comments from designers about like, you know, we always wanted our fashion presentations to be like totally inclusive, which of course you can't do with like a show in like a space that has a, you know, capacity. But I think what they really need to do is like limit the streams. Like you should have to have like a password to view the stream and not everyone can be allowed to do it because you need that. You need some sort of exclusivity to make it exciting. Hey,
what's up?
Welcome.
What's up? You're up.
Yoakum is joining us. Yeah, we're up. It's 10:15 in the morning. We've been up for hours preparing for this episode.
You've been doing your yoga?
Yes, that's right.
Good.
Hey guys. How are you doing? So Sam and Rachel are here.
Congratulations on bringing the greatest hat Corporate Lunch has seen among its guests.
Yeah, what's your headwear
into the Zoom today?
It's my daughter's beret I'm wearing today.
Oh, really? So it's not just a shrunken beret, it's a children's beret.
Exactly. I like it tight.
A tight fit. So it's not an Our Legacy beret?
No, it's not. We do berets, but, you know, you got to get some outside. You got to get something out. Yeah. I used to run really short hair, but I'm kind of in this time of where we're at. I'm just letting it out. So I'm in this... in this pain in the ass midst, like you're in between nothing really.
One thing I was thinking is we should start with a real good, like Swedish proper tutorial of how to say your full name.
In Swedish?
Yeah.
Okay. So my name is Bror Joakum Hallin.
Okay. So Joakum is pretty close.
Joakum is nice.
What most people call you. Not Joakum or...
Joakum? No, I'm too close to the Joker with the Joakum. No, it's Joakum.
Where are you right now? Have you been spending the last few weeks? Where have you been and what have you been doing?
I mean, since you might have like maybe have read about it or not, but Sweden is where it's kind of everything is open, but again, not really open. So. Like school, I have two small kids, 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. So they're going to school to daycare and stuff. So that's open, and so we kind of been spending the weeks in the city. Mm-hmm. I've been going working some in the office, some from home. Like the first couple of weeks when shit hit the fan, we kind of stayed home, like just stayed home for the first weeks, but. Then we kind of figured, yeah, we can work our way around this and spend some time. Kids can go and see their friends a little bit, and it's freedom under responsibility, they say in Sweden. Like that term.
So the deal is everyone has to just take all their like extra precautions in terms of like keeping it clean and I don't know, distant. What do you do? Hand washing and are you even doing like 6 feet social distancing or not really? It's more about
we're doing all that but everything is like done under you know, we got this trust from the government that we can actually go through this without locking it, you know, ourselves in.
Yeah.
So So it's like a test of character as well. Everything is open. You can go into a bar, a restaurant, but it's like if you go in there, people look at you like, "What are you doing here?" But everything is still open. So it's people go and, you know, they support the local restaurants and joints and stuff and take out food a lot. But it's still like some people you see, like some special bars, you know, that are, you know, that get really crowded, especially if there's, you know, Sweden is not, you know, we're not spoiled with sun here. So whenever the sun is out, people are like packing up and you know, they come, people from the authorities come and they kind of break up crowds and stuff at like certain kinds of places, like where you can, you know, cheap beer and, you know, that kind of places. But good respected restaurants keep open and they have, you know, good distance between the tables and stuff, and they can still, you know, they get a little business and hopefully they survive, you know.
And you feel good about the way that the situation is working out there? Like you feel relatively safe and like it's as under control as it can be or whatever, people are being responsible?
I mean, it's really hard because everybody's, you know, comparing numbers, comparing, you know, is the curve, is it flattened, is it not? I mean, it's hard to say, are we doing the right thing? I think from a Swede's perspective, it's been, when it started out, it felt like we responded really slow. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of freaking out a little bit. Nobody's like taking any actions. What are we doing? And then it felt like, okay, then we started to understand how, you know, the authorities were thinking how to get us through this. What's not been working that well is the protection for like elder homes has been more than I think they were hoping. So
how about in terms of our legacy, what have you been focusing on to try to get through this in the best position you can be in? I mean, it occurs to me that you probably have some pretty strong e-commerce and, maybe that helps, but you do a lot of wholesale too and have your own stores. So I'm sure you got a lot on your plate, but what's the experience been and what are you kind of focus? What are you like trying to focus on to like just get through to it and move on?
I mean, the first focus when we started feeling this was of course to not panic, you know, to take it easy and try to do the right calls, to not do anything, you know, over the top. We're a company depending on our own retail. We have e-commerce that are good for us, but we're also depending on wholesale and, you know, pretty much the whole world and every account that we work with closed down and some are opening up. Of course, some e-commerce accounts that we're working with are still open and have a good business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been both, you know, it's tough, but I think we're doing taking the right measures. And I think we'll get through this. Of course, we've been, no, last couple of months has only been, you know, our e-com has been our only lifeline kind of, which is kind of, we had one of these archive sales prepped already before.
Oh yeah.
That was just, you know, a perfect thing for us to have.
Can you give us a sense of like just the size of our legacy? Like, do you know like about how many accounts you have, how many like stores you have, stockists worldwide?
We work with around 200 accounts worldwide.
Men's and women's.
So the size is around 70% men's, 30% women's. And I mean, the US, Asia is together with Europe is, I mean, we have strong markets and strong cities that we work with. Of course, in your beautiful country, New York and LA, of course, is of course important. Tokyo in Asia, Tokyo and Seoul, South Korea is really, really strong market for us. UK has been for ages a very, very important one for us as well.
It's cool. Like you guys came out as, you know, a very Swedish brand, but maybe because you had a very simple name that's very easy for Americans to understand and pronounce, but always kind of seemed to really resonate very strongly outside of Sweden. I mean, I guess other Swedish brands do as well because, you know, especially in America, Sweden is so respected for its design and particularly tasteful sort of minimalism or whatever. Not that I would lump you in with that, but it's just a generalization we sort of have, you know. Yeah, but yeah, it seems like you guys, maybe it is the name. It never occurred to me, but Our Legacy is so easy for us and memorable. But it seems like you guys always did really well in America, even from the very beginning.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, I mean, the first couple of seasons when we brought our collections over and we, you know, we came to New York and showed them, we never really talked, you know, loudly about us coming from Sweden. It was, we tried to be, you know, a little bit, you know, we didn't want people to put us in a certain category or to become a Swedish brand, or we just wanted to be a brand or a collection, not as you know, try to stay as unbranded as possible, or like untitled, like to be free to be able to do what we want and to change the, you know, a couple of seasons later we take in a different direction a little bit, and you know, so maybe the name in the beginning was, because since we, you know, we came to the States around 2007, 2008. And there was like a strong, like a heritage preppy kind of movement going on. And we kind of got, you know, that label kind of got attached to us for a couple of years. And then when we started to, you know, experience more and to challenge ourselves, I think it took a little bit before people understood what we were really about. But I think, you know, now we're happy in the positions, that we're in. And you know, feels like we're both, we can keep our, you know, the older core customer, but we also find a lot of new guys and girls, you know, testing us, trying us out.
It's funny the timing that you're talking about, because a lot of people, obviously, in the U.S. with the economy, are comparing it to the 2008, you know, Great Recession that we had here or whatever. Is that?
The recession.
That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess you guys are really getting off the ground in a big way around that time. Do you remember then feeling like, oh shit, we're just getting going and now the economy's tanking, we're done for? Like, was there a moment back then that feels that maybe is a little bit, has some echoes of what's happening today? Or did you guys just cruise right through that without really noticing it much?
That's a good question. I mean, when we started out, I mean, the first couple of, you know, full collections that we launched were, you know, around that time when the banks, you know, went bust. And so, but we, since that was the only thing we knew, we didn't really reflect on it that much. We just did what we did. And maybe since we didn't do like crazy high price points, you know, it wasn't super complicated designs. We tried to do quality stuff at a fair price, and I think people responded to that really well, even though there was a recession going on. So maybe that helped us. And at the same time, since we never focused on one single market, we didn't just try to make it in Sweden first and then go abroad. It kind of helped us to spread the risk a little bit.
Well, you guys were making, the first thing I remember is just like the best blue Oxford, like button down collar shirt, like a really classic, but it was at a time when you couldn't find those everywhere. You know, like Stephen Allen had kind of that sort of casual shirt that was cool. And like, I think Tom Brown was around and some others, but like for the money and for like a shirt that fit that right kind of casual way, it was like the Our Legacy Oxford was like perfect. And I could totally, and that was how guys were really dressing at that time, right? Like coming out of that recession moment was this kind of like preppy and workwear, and these like really classic American sort of types were what were popular. And you had some pieces that fit that, like was the best, I think, of what was out there. Plus it was like a European brand and it felt kind of new and like cooler than everything. I just remember it very memorable to me, like probably buying it like at Odin in the East Village, maybe. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like 10 years later, when I moved to New York, I was like, damn, I'm really into these like sheer tops. These are sick.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Like I think Our Legacy really like sort of move, you know, it's moved and like predicted, you know, a new moment in dressing in a cool way, I think.
Thank you. I'd like to think so. So, I mean, we don't really try to predict what's going to be hot or not. I mean, we just do. When we started out, those shirts that we did, those Oxfords, were stuff that we wanted to wear, but we couldn't find at least in, you know, around where we hung out. So we kind of made them ourselves and tweaked the fit and just made them perfect for us. And then, you know, 10 years later, we're trying to do the same thing, but, you know, we're into slightly different stuff. We still do the shirts, we still do the Oxfords, but they're maybe not as out there as the sheer stuff that you might be interested
in. Can you give us go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was just going to ask, like, I remember seeing those photographs, I guess this would have been a year or two ago, of the show where you did the, like, destroyed soiree, which in fact ended up being, like, quite prophetic, because I feel like every brand has now done the destroyed soiree photo shoot. But that to me felt like a big, like, turning point, where it felt like, it didn't feel like more fashion-y, but it started to move more in that direction of, like, the sheer tops and the, like, sort of deconstructed things. And I'm wondering if that was, like, a conscious turning point, or if that was something that had just felt more, like, natural as an as a part of the brand's evolution.
I think that show that you're talking about, that was the second collection we presented for that included both men's and women's. And I think one of the big reasons that we wanted to, you know, try out to do women's wear as well is that we try to, you know, we've been testing those kind of fits out for men. But we've had, you know, female customers, you know, women, girls coming in buying the men's shirts in bigger sizes, but we've also had, you know, guys asking for, you know, of course, women ask for, you know, when is the women's collection coming, blah, blah, blah. But also guys wanting to, you know, experiment more and us as well. And it just made sense to kind of, you know, to do a collection which has both men's and women's, you know, it's feminine proportions on the women's side and it's masculine on the men's, but to mix that and to let guys dress in women's, you know, blouses and vice versa. So maybe that's, it wasn't like let's go wild. It's more like, okay, let's let that guy try on that blouse. You know, it became quite natural for us.
I saw something recently that you said. I think it was something like you sort of, as the brand just naturally grew and sort of like you guys have always been pretty comfortable with letting the aesthetic sort of evolve. Like there's a consistent sort of sensibility, but not super committed to like one look, one style. And I think I saw you say something like you went from being kind of the most expensive, like contemporary brand, meaning like mid, like in that mid range, to being the kind of entry point on the designer side of things. Yeah. And that was a much better place for you to be. I wonder if you could, do you still feel that way? Like you've sort of like the tier has shifted a little bit. The position is a little different, but you're more comfortable there. You feel like it's a better place for our legacy to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, different brands and different designers do different things. But I think, I mean, as you all know, it's like, you know, what you're hanging next to in a store kind of, you know, it affects your view on what you're looking at. And I mean, for us, it's, that kind of consumer looking at those brands were more open to what we were, you know, what we're up to these days. And I think that's a big reason why we're kind of, it's taken a good turn for us. But it's also, I mean, we've been kind of free to do what we want. We don't have any, you know, investors pushing us, demanding, you know, this or that amount of increase in, you know, turnover and stuff. So we kind of set, you know, aesthetic goals, aesthetic more like, okay, we want it to feel this way. We want to be able to do that kind of product, and that's more our goal than doing, you know, next year we need to turn over, you know, 100 million more. You know, that's never the carrot for us.
I think all businesses should set aesthetic goals rather than economic ones. That's such a lovely idea.
I mean, you kind of feel that now as well. You know, people, you know, that have, you know, pushed, you know, turnover, you know, bigger numbers. That bubble bursts very easily when it kind of turns around and becomes, you know, tougher times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting point. Like, I think a lot of designers right now are sort of having this like existential moment where they're questioning like the way that they do things and trying to rethink things, but you already do things in like this very unorthodox way. So like, is there anything that you're thinking like, oh, we want to do this differently, or we want to do more of this or less of that? Or
I mean, coming out of this, or I mean, now what we're talking about is, of course, that since we don't have anybody telling us what to do, we kind of, you know, from time to time have a hard time limit ourselves to like, okay, we can only do this amount of SKUs. We can only, you know, we kind of go crazy sometimes and do too big collections, you know, too much stuff. And that's kind of the lesson that we're learning now is, you know, we have to take it a little bit more easy, limit ourselves a little bit more, be more, you know, decisive in not offering too crazy amounts of, you know, the people looking at our stuff, they don't, it's not going to help them if they have, you know, 50 shirts to choose from. Maybe we can actually do the job deciding which 25 are the actual best ones, and that's what you get to choose from. So I think that's one of the, you know, things that we're going forward is going to be, you know, a little bit smaller collections. You know, we've kind of tried to do the homework, you know, a couple of times before we show the collections.
Well, I think the big, like one big hopeful sort of thing that's shaping up through this in terms of fashion and style and clothing and all of it, the whole world is like the creators like yourself are in a position to rethink how they do things. And then the consumers, us, are in a position to have to rethink things as well. And it's not just about like having less money to do stuff with. I think it's about really considering what you do with your money, or what you want to represent, or what you stand for, what you stand behind. I mean, you know, even people who maybe financially aren't affected by this, I do think that you come away from something like this, or I think we will come away from this with just like a different sensibility, a different ideas about the brands that we pump our money into, you know? And I think like you're saying, like, however this, whatever sort of demands are on, however you guys have to change things to keep the business in a healthy place is one thing. But I think there could also just be this idea of like, hey, we should really think about what we're putting into the world in a new way now. And maybe that means making a little bit less, really making sure every single piece is like 110% what we need and want it to be. And that's going to serve this new consumer who's probably thinking of things and expecting, or like now is going to demand that level of depth that maybe they weren't so insistent on before, I guess, something like that. Yeah. Just change attitudes, change approaches on both ends that could ultimately lead to like something better, even if it means, and it probably means a lot of businesses will be really hurt or won't make it through, but that's just a reality, I think, that will come with it.
Yeah. And I think that's what you see as well. You see companies that do one product really, really well are the ones, you know, they don't really have big issues going through this because they do what they do. They've always been doing it. And it's a great product pre the crisis, and hopefully also post, you know, people that do too much and kind of, you know, bury themselves in too many styles and too many things, you know, it's, that also makes, you know, I think when you're reading, and also when we've been discussing internally, is of course that the climate is not healthy with too many collections going out, you know, too tight in between, you know, stuff don't seem, it seems hot for a minute and then the next collection comes out and you have to put the old stuff on sale and you know, it's not what people need. It's not what brands need. It's not what the world need. It's better to shop a little less, but be, you know what you're after, and you're going to find that good item, and you don't have to buy three of it. You need one, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Have you guys, this is like a really abstract question, but have you guys, in thinking about designing future collections, so I don't know how far you are on like spring 21 and fall 21, but have you started thinking about new aesthetic directions that maybe respond to this, like, you know, clothes that have a different kind of feeling to them, either if it's like, I'm curious about how people see aesthetic styles maybe changing or responding to this moving forward? Like, is Spring 21 going to be full of like apocalyptic clothes that are all just like about like surviving, like whatever climate crisis and like things that feel like defensive and protective and like secure and utilitarian? Or is it going to be like, no, let's celebrate bright, airy, light, lively, whatever. Where are you guys at aesthetically thinking into the next few collections, or have you even gotten there yet?
I mean, to be honest and transparent, I think since we're working with Italian mills and we produce more or less everything in Portugal, we do some stuff in Italy as well. And Italy has been closed. Portugal has been kind of closed, you know, going on, you know, 20-25% or so, and it's gonna affect what we're gonna be able to do.
Yeah.
And I think a natural step is kind of to actually look at what we've been up to the last couple of years and to update and to do the stuff that we know people like, and not to sound boring, but it's just we need to be pragmatic here and you know, do a collection that we know gonna work for us. It's gonna work to produce it. It's gonna, you know, work also when it hits the stores. And then of course we're going to sprinkle it with a lot of, you know, fun stuff as well, and there might be some cargo pants or, you know, tactical vest with some, I don't know,
yeah,
just to tweak it a little bit. Now I'm just kidding, but of course I mean, if you don't go through this, you know, if you go through this unaffected, then, you know, you're doing something wrong. So
tactical berets.
Exactly. The hidden pocket, the stash pocket.
Yeah.
I really like the Our Legacy workshop project, because it provides people with a bit of a window into the creative process, because you're, you know, like upcycling old products and, you know, like sort of reworking samples and stuff like that and providing those to people. Can you just tell us a little bit more about workshop and how that came about and why you guys wanted to open the store and sort of make that part of the business?
Yeah, absolutely. So workshop is our kind of upcycle recycle project that we've been doing for three plus years now. It started out from kind of a feeling that we're, you know, when you're in the fashion game producing, you're gonna end up with a lot of, you know, excess residual stuff. You know, you buy too many meters of a fabric, you know, you end up with, you know, some pairs left of a trouser that didn't sell out. You know, you're gonna end up with a lot of stuff, and when that goes on for too many seasons, you kind of build a mountain of stuff that you, you know, what do we do with this? And of course you can do sample sales and you can do, but it's kind of, that kind of, you know, when you have rolls of fabrics that you bought and to be also, I mean, when you buy a fabric for a certain garment that you're producing, you can't be like, okay, I'm gonna do 434 meters of this fabric to be able to reach our what we need. You're gonna have to buy like 500 or 600 meters. You know, you always end up with, you know, it's gonna be rolls laying around, and we just saw that going to Portugal when we have our factories, you know, our vendors, it was just, you know, too many things laying around. You know, what do we do with this? So the workshop came around as a project. We wanted to do a store that ourselves wanted to go to, you know, what's our dream store? What is it like? You know, what do you find there? So workshop is a store and it's a studio where we redo stuff over dye, you know, alter items in one way or another. And it's been working really well. So we kind of, those rolls of fabrics laying around, maybe they're from 2 seasons ago or 10 seasons ago, but we kind of do them in styles that we know that we like and that our consumer like, and we put them out in small runs. We have our, you know, kind of like merch line, which is maybe our way of, you know, doing more, tapping into a little bit to what, you know, the long sleeves and t-shirts and hoodies and stuff that kind of fills a void that we don't really do in our main collections. But that's all done from, you know, upcycled material.
Yeah, it's cool how you built that like graphic. Like if Our Legacy had like a streetwear branch, you kind of built it into the workshop program, which I think was sort of a cool decision rather than do that separately or put that in the main line, but like to take the workshop idea and give it that like juice with the graphics and like that kind of direction was very cool because I think it helps make that feel really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we love it too internally, and it kind of feels, you know, it does something else for us, which is great. And, you know, as well as we take care of, if there's like a cargo pant that we have 12 pairs left of that, you know, we over dye them, put a patch on them, and you know, kind of, you know, if it's two seasons old, it doesn't mean it has to be, you know, sold at 70% discount. We can kind of take it easy, you know, treat it with something that makes it, you know, feel fresh and you know, even more valuable than before, and put it out there and get it. So that's kind of what we've been doing with these workshop drops, and they've been, you know, selling out since we started putting them online, and it's been, you know, it's a fun journey. It's a little bit frustrating because I kind of, I'm really hands-on into that, and it's, I want to find more stuff. It's, I know people are, you know, frustrated sometimes they didn't get their size or they, you know, sold out.
Blah, yeah, blah. Including and not, me.
And it's not intentional. It's not like, okay, let's try to build a, you know, like a Supreme box logo kind of vibe that you can't get your hands on. It's more like we do whatever we get our hands on, we do fun stuff with it, and then we put it back out, and you know, whatever we find, it's what's available.
Yeah.
And that's also like, sorry, I interrupt here. Yeah. But no, the workshop is also a fun and like a natural place where we can work with other brands, which in like a natural, more fun and you know, careful way, which is it's really good. We've done some projects with different brands, everything from you know, bedding companies. One called Magniberg, a Stockholm bedding brand. Oh, yeah. We did some beautiful beddings with old shirt materials. That we just put out. That was really nice. We worked with Artek, the Finnish furniture company. We have a new project with them coming out soon. Converse sends us some dead stock that we over dye and patch up. And,
cool.
It's like a fun hub for us to work with. You know, everybody that works in our legacy goes there, and they're like, you know, we kind of have to keep them away from clearing the stock before we do these online drops. It's a good energy hub, I feel.
Yeah. So you guys are making I was wondering how the Converse worked, but they just send you regular Converse, and you guys.
It's like when they have like a color going out that's not in their collection anymore. When we can get our, you know, it's like a dead stock, you know, some pairs that you know, they kind of, you know, we get it from them and we, you know, upcycle it and make them fun. And we have some projects with other brands coming out soon that you know, I'm really excited to be launching soon.
And those will be under the workshop sort of umbrella?
Yeah.
You ready to share what it's going to be or not yet?
No, not yet. Right, I think you might know one, but...
Yeah. Yeah, if you if you Venmo me $500, I'll tell you what it is. Changing gears for a second, let's just talk about growing up in Sweden, because you guys, you've talked a lot about with our legacy and just in our conversations, there's a lot of that like 90s influence and a lot of just like whatever underground culture, if it's skateboarding or hardcore music or whatever, just scenes that you guys are a part of that go into the collection. We didn't even say you're one of three founders. So it's, you know, it's, and you guys have known each other for a long time, right?
Yeah. Me and Christopher founded the company. Then a couple of years later, Ricardo's joined us and it was us three musketeers for a little bit. And so we're the three owners and we've been doing it ever since. Since 2005 was the first little t-shirt collections that we launched, and now it's
right. So you're right at 15 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's it like? What was it like for you growing up in Sweden? What was your youth like, and how did that end up informing what you do?
I mean, we're grown up in a smaller city, or like, I don't know, the 10th biggest city in Sweden, which is Bayou Ormesh is a very small town.
it's like a farming but, you know, town.
No, no. But, you know, it had stores. It had a fashion store that sold, you know, whatever was good now. But, you know, but on very, like, limited capacity. And I don't know. Growing up in Sweden was like a thirst for culture, you know. Thirst for knowledge. Thirst for, you know, you couldn't really get your hands on anything. You know, it was tough to get, you know, if you're into skateboarding, it was tough to get your hands on a couple of, you know, whatever you wanted, Duff's shoes or Vans or whatever. You
yes,
know. Tough to find. Or if you were into, you know, music, you know, it was still, you know, it was a quest to get everything. So of course we grew up on, you know, drooling in front of MTV, kind of dreaming about how it was like in the States, you know, fantasizing about, you know, going to London, which was, you know, the closest. So British, you know, indie, 90s indie is of course big in our hearts. For me, skateboarding, snowboarding, hardcore was this big. We grew up on that, and you know, it affected me in a lot of ways. You know, Christopher was more, you know, rock, but also he's into art. He went to Italy after school to study there. No, the quest was kind of like to get out of that city. You know, where do you go? You know.
So, and what was your first exposure like to fashion? Were there brands or people or scenes that like really turned you guys on to exploring fashion more specifically?
I mean, I worked in when I was like from I was I don't know 11, 12. I worked in the local fashion store that kind of did, you know, Carhartt, you know, some, you know, when Acne released their first collections, they sold it there, which I don't even remember the year, 90 something.
Wait, you were 12 years old?
Yeah, I did my like summer work during the summers there from when I was like 12, 13.
That's
cool. So that's started when I
young
started
in Sweden.
flip denim, and you know, it was like, you know, we had some fresh jive, there was some streetwear stuff, and it was cool. It was a fun story, you know, it was a different time, you know, we could. People were like, no, they didn't really understand what it was, but they, you know, they picked up some bits here and there, and you know,
yeah,
it was a fun time to kind of explore a lot of the bigger Sweden fashion brands started around that time, so we kind of saw the first collections for them coming out,
right,
coming into the stores, which kind of made you, you know, think, okay, so, you know. You see these guys coming into the stores, showing a collection out of a bag. You know, it's, you know, kind of got your mind thinking. You know, what do I want to do when I grow up? You know, it's, you know, maybe, I, you know, sounds cool to have a car and, you know, go around in the cities and show clothes. And you know. So that was like one of the first goals.
What was it about that period, do you think, that really like was, I guess, like fertile ground for people in Sweden to start fashion brands? Like, it feels like Sweden sort of punches above its weight in the international fashion scene in terms of just like the quantity and quality of brands that come out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it was just around, but I mean, no, you know, people came, you know, grew up in the right time to start their brands around that age, I guess. I don't know if it was, you know, what it was, but it was a lot of things going on during that time, you know, early 90s that kind of sparked a lot of ideas as well, I think, and but with music, art, stuff going on. But also, I don't know, maybe people here were a little bit tired of just doing, you know, buying foreign brands or you know, the elder Swedish brands that kind of grew old, you know. So I don't know, it was a good time. And then, you know, 10 years later, we started, and I think around that time was a good kind of, you know, a span of a couple of years when a lot of brands started as well.
What was the first product? Was it shirts?
Now, both me and Christopher, we did graphic design in school in different levels. So we did like graphic t-shirts, you know, we had all these ideas in our head on things that we wanted to express, but we were quite limited. So it turned out into like graphical concepts for t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So we went to, I worked at a fashion agency for a couple of years, and I kind of learned the trade there. We went to Florence, Italy, and produced some internal brands there. So I kind of learned, you know, how to go about it. And then we, around that same time, we started our legacy. So especially the first legacy collections were done outside of Florence.
Oh, cool.
And we just, you know, we took it from there. So it was first kind of stuff was t-shirts. And then we kind of added a product at a time, since we don't have a classic fashion schooling, you know, we learned how to do shirts, you know, we knew how do we want the end product to feel and fit. So we kind of, you know, we were grinding until we've, you know, came to that kind of result that we wanted. So we added season by season, we added shirting, knitwear, trousers, you know, and then around that time, 2007, 2008, we kind of had a full, or more or less full collections with even like a shoe, like a deck shoe.
All right. Well, 15 years in, man, you guys are still doing it. You're like the definitely like senior class of menswear. You're a senior citizen. I don't know what you are, but a lot of brands don't make it that long. So congrats on that.
Thank you. But we still feel like newcomers, I think, in you know, and get treated like that in some capacity as well, which I think is a blessing. You know, we still feel like a new brand to a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. And you guys existed a little bit outside of the fashion sphere, right? Like, despite quietly growing and being one of the coolest brands and doing a really strong business and being in all the right stores, you still weren't really that like capital F fashion sort of scene brand ever. Did you ever feel like you weren't getting the recognition you deserved, or did you feel like you guys were right in the spot where you wanted it to be, which is on the outside a little bit?
I think it kind of left us in a place where we could, you know, try a lot of stuff out without getting, you know, called out on doing weird stuff that we shouldn't be doing, or we were a little bit left in peace to try our ideas out, and once they kind of were good enough, we, you know, presented them, and it worked well for us. Maybe sometimes we kind of feel like, you know, a lot of our ideas that we've done and we kind of let to rest for a season or two were picked up by other brands and, you know, bigger players. But, you know, that's just how the fashion game is. And we're not like, you know, we're not sorry or we don't have any regrets. It's just, you know, we kind of learn as well. You know, the quest for constantly doing new design also kind of, that means we have to leave really good stuff behind as well. And that's maybe what we're learning these days as well. You know, we've done some really good stuff over the years, and we don't need to do 200 new SKUs each season. You know, we can actually use what we've done. And you know, because that's, you know, people respond to that, those styles really well. You know, it doesn't need to be 3 sleeves on a shirt, or, you know, you can just, you know, keep on doing what we're doing. And I think in our natural state is challenging ourselves, and I think that's what kind of brings newness to what we do.
All right, we hit the clock is winding down. Does anyone want to do vibes? Yakum, you feel like doing some vibes? You got any vibes to share? Vibes is just vibes? Like, yeah, 13 vibes, the lightning round of things that recommendations. It's our recommend.
Of course I want to do vibes. Love vibes.
Okay.
All right, let's do it.
For vibes. Live for vibes. 13 vibes. Do we all do it, or?
Well, it might mostly be you, but let's see how it goes. No, we all do it. We all do it.
Okay.
You got to start, though.
Okay. So it's just like stuff that I've been, you know, experiencing, listening to.
Exactly.
Whatever, or...
Eating, yeah, reading, okay. Eating, looking at... you know, new dance moves you're trying out, maybe people you're talking to. Yeah. Anything.
Now I read the Beastie Boys book, and then I watched the Beastie Boys story on Apple TV. That's you know, those are big for me. So kind of got into them around between the Shake Your Head and the Ill Communication album. And, you know, it's been, you know, those were really influential on me, you know, on those in the 90s. So
I haven't watched the doc yet.
Fun to see. No, it's great. It's amazing. I'll strongly recommend that. Great.
I just ordered the book.
Sorry?
I just ordered the book.
Yeah. I read the book first. So you kind of know in the when you watch the doc that you kind of know where they're going all the time, which is kind of, it's fine. But you, it's a lot of more visuals, you know, Spike Jonze kind of, you know, it's a fun thing to watch. Talking about the Beastie Boys, I also, like four or five weeks ago, I found Mike D's podcast is really, really nice. It's called Echo Chamber.
Oh, yeah.
It's going through a lot of music that they've been sampling, talking to, you know, new artists, not necessarily just hip hop, but it could be from anywhere. You know, he's a big music guy and it's, you know, good vibes, good listen.
The Beastie Boys really like, talk about like prophetic, like I feel like they really, in terms of like taking influence from all over and sort of treating it equally, both in terms of style and music and like this whole like kind of like mashup culture we've been living in for,
yeah,
I don't know, like Sam Hinds' whole life. It just feels like it's very much, not that the Beastie Boys were the first or whatever, but they were like the prime example of doing that. And it's like, you're not a poser if you like more than one thing, or you're not, you know, yeah, you can still be authentic and real and committed, but you can also just be like wide ranging and all over the place and messy about it.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up on hardcore. I've been playing a lot of hardcore bands and stuff, and Beastie Boys started out as a hardcore group and then moved into rap. And that's where I kind of ended up as well, you know, listening to that type of music as well. And it kind of, you know, it's a perfect fit.
Our legacy sort of sounds like a hardcore band name. I've always liked that.
It does, yeah.
Like a straight edge, like from the DC scene or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
OLHC.
The other thing that's so cool about Mike D is that his mom is like one of the like premier art collectors in the United States.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and she was actually one of the first owners of the Constantine Brancusi sculpture. I think it was Bird in Space, but it might have been the unique form and continuity. But she was like one of the first people to buy that, and I think she ended up selling it to MoMA. But she has this like really incredible collection of old master paintings, and she bought these things like when they weren't super expensive. And I think she was a school teacher, and she just like would save all of her money and like purchase these things. And it's so interesting to think about like Mike D growing up in this like house with this incredible art. Yeah. It really like learning that sort of like really reoriented my thinking about the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, well,
made me take them a lot more seriously, actually.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to order this book.
Yeah, it's a good read.
Who else has vibes?
My vibe is the triple threat of disastrous Rolling Stones movies / documentaries that were made in like the late 60s and early 70s. So there's Cocksucker Blues, which was a tour documentary made in, I think, the mid 60s. Where the filmmakers gave all these like roadies and like the Stones on a tour of these, you know, handheld cameras and stuff. And the final product captured like so much drug use and bad behavior that the Stones sued the filmmaker. And now it's only allowed to be, it can only be screened, like legally, it can only be screened when the director is in the audience, like when he's present. Obviously now it's just on YouTube, so anyone can watch it. And then Gimme Shelter, the tour doc of the Stones taking America in 69, which obviously culminates in the really horrifying Altamont Speedway show where the like Jerry Garcia was like, hey man, like, you know, you should get the Hell's Angels to do security. The great guys. And then of course they ended up killing someone. And the whole, you know, the event that sort of like ended the like Woodstock movement, I guess. And then Performance, which is the movie from 71, I think, that where Jagger sort of co-stars with Anita Pallenberg is this like, you know, louche, washed up rock star guy who helped this this dude played by James Fox hide out in his mansion. It was premiered, I think it was done by Warner Bros. And the premiere was such a disaster that apparently, like, you know, some executive's wife threw up in her handbag. Like, the movie's like really raunchy and crazy. And so they basically shelved it for 2 years and like super quietly released it to theaters. And it was like a huge, you know, it was a huge bust. Wow. And the movie's really fascinating. It's actually pretty good. It's on Criterion. But like it kind of ruined everyone's life who was involved. besides like Jagger, you know, Anita Pallenberg like developed a crazy heroin addiction, and she actually like does it on screen in the movie. And she was obviously dating Keith Richards at the time. And Keith was so mad that she was in this movie with Mick because he thought that they were having an affair. And of course they were. And then the main character, James Fox, like had to become an evangelical Christian because of like how horrified he was by everything had that went to. Down.
So, Joachim, was American classic rock big for you growing up? Or was that like not considered cool at all?
Classic rock? I mean, digging through your parents' record, you know, LPs, you know, Springsteen, you know, those kind of guys, of course. So, yeah. Talking about the Stones, did you hear the new Stones single?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't.
His voice, man. Jagger's voice has aged so well. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It still sounds good.
Wow.
Nothing hurts Mick Jagger.
No,
how like can it? Emerges like just like higher and higher height.
Yeah, how can it?
It's really incredible.
Yeah, Corporate Lunch is really always bringing you guys the most cutting edge from the culture, including the Beastie Boys and the Rolling Stones. So if you guys haven't...
I don't know if you guys have heard of these bands.
If you haven't checked out the Beastie Boys and the Rolling Stones, there's your vibes. And Joachim, thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And fun to chat with you, and stay safe and well and healthy. Does anyone have any final vibes before we sign off and send this one to the Library of Congress?
My vibe is Sweden. Sounds like a much better time than
You guys gonna have
New York and Chicago
midsommar celebrations or what? How's this gonna work?
I don't know. You're not gonna be able to hold hands dancing that pole.
All right, so maybe we'll skip this year and we'll come for it next year.
Yeah, I look forward to coming back visiting you as well.
Yeah, man. We'll see you in New York or in Sweden.
Good
talking
to you guys.
Bye, guys. Bye.